Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Well, Jason mentioned that the girls had to sing, but I don't think Autumn caught that since she came in that late, she's actually doing special music. Did you mention that? All right. You've got about 45 minutes to prepare. It's good to see. Let's see. We have a few visitors. We have Frankie Cimino and Jared Gennaro. They're with us. They've been eating us out of house and home for 3 or 4 days, but they've come down to hunt before winter family weekend. So I guess it's good to have them. But, we're looking forward to that and spend the next few days with them. When I was a little boy, I did not go to kindergarten. I went to first grade. I began school. Had a teacher. What's her name? Mrs. Turner was my first teacher, and she was a nice teacher. I was pretty well behaved at that age. I didn't act out much, but I got in trouble for the first time. Right before the, I guess you'd say, Christmas break, we went around the room, and she asked the question, what is Santa Claus bringing you for Christmas? So, I don't know, I was maybe halfway through the class, sitting in the middle, and they got to me, and I said, there's no such thing as Santa Claus, no one's bringing me anything. And it was a stunned look, and the kids kind of just shocked. And she stopped everything, and she brought me up to the front of the room. And I don't really remember. I do remember I got in a little trouble. I was about to cry because I was like, what in the world did I do wrong? So this whole world, really, we don't even relate to them as far as God's holy days opposed to the world's holidays. So today, although we all know all of this, we're going to look at Christmas. It's good to review for the younger people. Sure, we grew up in it, but you can see some of the issues that there are about Christmas. The world says, what's wrong, even though some of these issues do exist? We're keeping Christ's birthday. We're celebrating it. Well, we just want to look at some of the origins and what the Bible actually says about some of these issues. Now, I am doing a PowerPoint today. Going to try this at school. I don't have notes like this because you're expecting feedback and you just kind of go on each slide. So how this goes between the notes I have and the PowerPoint, we'll just have to see. But so it should be interesting. Let's experiment. And we all know this Christmas stuff, but it is good to review it. We're going to look at 4 different points that relate to Christmas and why we do not keep it. All right. There's 4 reasons. We're going to look at, this is not mentioned in the Bible. We have very specific holidays that we do keep, that we know God commands us to, and this is not mentioned anywhere in the Bible. You will not find it after Christ's death. You will not find it actually being really accepted for 3 centuries or so after the death of Christ. We're going to also look at Christmas breaks God's laws. We're going to look at some of the instances inside the Christmas holiday that just completely go against everything God teaches us. We're also going to look at the focus around Christmas is not in Christ. My wife mentioned, I had her look through this PowerPoint just to see, because I kept looking at it, make sure I didn't have something just totally discombobulated, and she noticed this, and she said, are you going to mention, because co-workers of hers at work had mentioned how mean people are this time of year, about don't you grab the last this at some store. Well, that's the case now. It's not, the focus isn't on Christ, it's all on you. We're also going to look at, would God appreciate this date? December 25th has a lot of significance among pagan holidays. And we're going to look at, would God really appreciate this date being used as the celebration of His Son? Point number 1, it's not mentioned in the Bible. I saw this on Facebook. I don't know, someone posted. I'm sure it may have been someone in here. I thought that's pretty good, because that does show that It's not mentioned in the Bible. Let's look at the nativity scene, if we will. Luke 2. We know this is the only instance that the birth of Christ is actually mentioned. Let's look at Luke 2. I'm going to read verses 7 through 20. This is the only instance that it talks about the actual birth of Christ. Verse 7, and she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. Now, if you really look at the translation of the word inn, it really, there were not inns in Bethlehem. Bethlehem was a very small area that was not really accepted or considered to be an area that there would be an inn at. Inn was usually people's houses. And the manger is a little questionable. A lot of commentaries will mention that the manger was actually the downstairs area where the animals were kept in the house. Yes, they fed them in a feed area, but most people consider that to be like we have our animals kept in a certain area, and if people stay over at your house, they're ended up in that area as well. So that's what a lot of commentaries speculate that actually was, rather than he's out with the goats in an old ramshackle shed, that was actually the case. I think about a woman that's giving birth. Who in the world is going to actually say, oh, yeah, you're out in the barn, I don't care. You know, you treat your animals better than that. You typically do not treat people like that. Verse 8, and there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And we'll see this later, and I think all of you know that represents something that we believe, and I think there's a lot of proof, actually, that does play a part in what we do believe. Verse 9, and lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. Verse 10, and the angel said unto them, fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you, you shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. Verse 13, and suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass that the angels were gone away from them into heaven. The shepherds said one to another, let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord has made known to us. Verse 16, and they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. Verse 20, and the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen as it was told unto them. Now that is the story that is told in the Bible. It is the only example that talks about Christ's birth, and that's it. And somehow the world has taken this, done away with all of the holy days, everything that has very specific instructions on how to keep, and has turned this into the largest celebration that's known in the world. Looking at this, we know that Christmas was not celebrated early in the church. It was not really accepted until about the 3rd century after Christ's death. From New York Sunday Times, there was an article, December 25th, 2011, and this was a historian who researched Jewish history. And it said, why didn't the early Christians celebrate the festival honoring the birth of Jesus Christ? Said they did not, for the same reason they honored no other birthday or anniversary. It was strongly felt that the celebrating of any day or date, be they birthdays or anniversaries of an event, was a custom of the pagans. Now that's why I think our church throughout time has question birthday celebrations at times, whether we do or not. Biblically, you could see some verses that somewhat allude to this, but there's nothing specific about it. So we kind of backed off of actually saying, no, you do not celebrate birthdays. But at the beginning, they did not believe that you celebrated birthdays, and they just, quite frankly, did not keep the celebration of Christ's birth. Everyone knows how important his death was and what it gave to people, but they just simply did not believe that we should celebrate the birth of Christ. Now, it was not celebrated at all for the first three centuries. Again, this is from history.com. Mr. Dobson has said, make sure you quote your sources. When church officials finally settled on December 25th at the end of the 3rd century, they likely wanted the date to coincide with existing pagan festivals honoring Saturn, which is called Saturnalia. It's a celebration. And Mithra, the Persian god of light. Mithraism, very mysterious religion. It's a non-existent religion anymore, but it's a very strange religion. We'll see that in just a moment. When they were able to integrate these pagan religions in, they were able to bring more people into the church and accept Christianity, and they wanted the Christian religion to be the national religion accepted, so they were able to integrate these in and have this accepted. And that way we can say, hey, everyone's Christian now, even though these are completely pagan worship beliefs, as we will see. But it did become easier for people to accept this, and did become the empire's official religion. Now, what are these pagan festivals? I'm sure everyone's heard of Saturnalia. I may have heard of Mithraism. I'm guessing a few people, not a lot. Saturnalia. Saturnalia is, what would you call it, a drunken festival for people 1 week out of the year. There were, I guess you'd say, caste systems in Rome. You had the, I guess you'd say, nobility down to the beggars on the street. Well, this one time in the year, everyone was equal. So they went out, there was no working, they celebrated, they partied. They did something very similar that's going to remind you of another holiday, or it certainly does to me. Let's see, Saturnalia, this is again from historytoday.com. The poet Lucian of Samosata, I guess, and he would live from 120 to 180 A.D., he wrote a poem, and he has the god Cronus, who's considered Saturn, talk in this poem, and it's entitled Saturnalia. It said, during my week, the Sirius is barred. No business allowed, drinking and being drunk, noise and games of dice, appointed of kings and feasting of slaves, singing naked, clapping, an occasional ducking of corked faces in icy water. I'm not sure what that means, but such are the functions over which I preside. Does that remind you of anything that goes on today? Anything? I thought I heard it.
Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras. New Year could be as well. Mardi Gras reminds me very much of that. If you'll see, you can watch live webcams of New Orleans, and I had a class where I was required to watch that during, I guess it was that Fat Tuesday. It was unbelievable. You would see people literally throwing up right in front of the webcams. Of course, women flashing, all of this stuff. And I think that's why this teacher was borderline pervert, in my opinion, so he wanted us all to watch and talk about that stuff. But think about this. This is the celebration that they were able to integrate into something that celebrates Christ's birth. Can you imagine walking in here on one of the holy days, Feast of Trumpets, any day? We come in, half the people are naked, and everyone's out here drunk, acting like that. You think God would appreciate that as being something to celebrate something as special as his son's birth? I don't think so. Now, Mithraism, it's a very weird mystic religion. Really, they from what history shows, it did not really come into existence until the first century, and it only lasted until the fourth century after Christ's death. They had a very complex system of initiations. They had these very strict rituals. They had these special handshakes. A lot of the Roman soldiers, from what it showed, got involved in this Mithraism. And they met in underground temples. And they were called, Mithraeae, I guess. And many of those have been found. They found literally hundreds and hundreds of those across Europe. And really, it was located, the majority of these temples were in central Rome, but they found them all over Europe. Numerous archaeological finds have contributed to knowledge about this, because people really don't know a lot about this. And I'll show you a scene that's probably the most famous scene of anything in the Mithraism religion. Now, these are some of their beliefs, and these are passed down, and this is what they proclaim as their belief system, very similar to something that we all know. 100 years before Jesus, according to the Mithraic religion, three wise men of Persia came to visit the baby Savior God, Mithra, bringing him gifts of gold, myrrh, and frankincense. Sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Mithra was born on December 25th, as told in the Great Religions of the World, which is page 330 if you need to see it. It was the winter solstice celebrated by ancients as the birthday of Mithraism's sun god. This was another belief. Again, this was in the first century. This was before Christ's birth was ever really accepted among Christians. This is the most famous sculpture, I guess you'd say, or artifact found within Mithraism. This is the god Mithra slaughtering and sacrificing a bull. There were over 700 of these that have been found so far. They're all found in underground caves. Now, you'll see, let me go ahead and go there. According to Mithraism, before he died on a cross, again, very similar to actual Christ's life, he celebrated the Last Supper with his 12 disciples. Now, his 12 disciples represented the 12 signs of the zodiac. Now, each one of these outer creatures or figures that you see, they represent different signs of the zodiac. It's not real easy to see in that picture, but they represent that. Each little piece of this artifact represents something else that really, truly we look at and say, that's just completely pagan. So Mithraism, again, was accepted into something that God, so special that he sent his only son to us, and people who are supposed to be Christians decided to implement this into his belief system. Now, what does the Bible say about this? Let's look at Deuteronomy 4 and verse 2. I take a little bit of Tim's time. I think he said he didn't mind too much. I'm not sure how long I'm going to be here. So, Deuteronomy 4 and verse 2. God, again, gives very specific commands on what he wants from us, doesn't he? Verse 2, it says, "You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish any from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you." It's very specific instructions on how he wants us to keep his holy days. There's nothing mentioned about sacrificing or zodiac signs, getting drunk and naked in temples. That just simply does not exist in God's world. He does not expect us to do that. While we're here, let's go to Deuteronomy 12. Deuteronomy 12, verses 30 through 32. This explains God did not want the Israelites to become involved with the world's pagan beliefs. Verse 30 says, "Take heed to yourself that you be not snared by following them after they be destroyed from before you, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. Verse 31, thou shalt not do so unto the Lord thy God, for every abomination to the Lord which he hates have they done unto their gods. For even their sons and their daughters have they burnt in the fire to their gods. I might mention Mithraism. They do believe that a lot of human sacrifice was actually involved in that. Saturnalia, a little bit, but Mithraism is believed, you know, thousands and thousands of people were probably sacrificed with that. Verse 32. What things soever I command you, observe to do it. You shall not add to it nor diminish from it. Very specific instructions again about how he wants people to keep his holy days and how he wants people to worship him. Point number two, Christmas breaks God's laws. I probably could have worded this a little bit better, but I just plain and simple, the celebration of Christmas, much of it does break God's laws. Angels on top of a tree. Doesn't seem like there should be anything wrong with that, right? That's just showing something that a pretty little figurine that represents the angels that sang and celebrated at Christ's birth, right? Well, in the 1500s, and Christmas trees really became accepted as part of mainstream Christmas keeping at this time. Many people believe that the angel on top of the tree would drive evil spirits from their house. They were using this, in a sense, as an image, as a graven image to drive things from their house. Rather than rely on God, they decided to do this. Let's look at Exodus 20 and verse 4. I'll read from the King James and then from the English Standard Version. Simply part of the Ten Commandments. Verse 4, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water underneath. That's the King James Version. The English Standard Version says, you shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. God did not want us making graven images of what people perceive as something that came out of heaven, be it an angel. We have no idea what angels look like. They have wings. Who knows? We have no idea what they're spirit beings. That's all we know. But people, in their perception, have taken something like this and turned it into something that God says do not do. But people continue to do it. Santa Claus, what's wrong with some big fat guy in a red suit giving kids gifts? Now, you can really look into Santa Claus, and it gets into some really weird stuff that it may have originated from. The Santa Claus that we know today, believe it or not, originated from a Coca-Cola ad in 1931 that we see typically, that we picture him as. But what, excuse me, what do people tell their kids about Santa Claus? Again, the story that first time I ever get in trouble in school for was because Santa Claus didn't exist. Did he exist? No. But what do people do with their children until they're 8, 9 years old? They lie to them, right? This guy's going to come down your chimney, which chimneys now are about this big around. How in the world he could get down there, I'm not sure, but they say that he can. Going to come through the fire, which there is speculation that that also represents a pagan belief system. But there's so much in here that it's very hard to do anything but hit the highlights. But what do? They teach their children that it's okay to lie, okay? We all teach our children, no, you always tell the truth, and yet many people, the first thing they do, Santa Claus is going to give you this, right? That's absolutely what they teach them. Go down to Exodus 20, verse 16. Verse 16, very simple, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. I would say you could put that with your children as well. Don't lie to your children that Santa Claus actually exists, and yet the whole world thinks it's okay to teach that this man in a suit's coming down your chimney to do that. Thank you, sir. Now the Christmas tree. little more speculation on this because of the verse that I'm going to look at, but let's look at some other verses and put those together. We all know this verse, Jeremiah 10 and verse 2. Wish I'd known this at 6 years old to have told my first grade teacher, hey, look at that verse. But I don't think she would have appreciated that. Let's go down to verse 5. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the customs of the people are vain, for one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workman, with the axe. Just remember that, because that's a little key to something that I found from a Jewish historian. Verse 4, they deck it with silver and with gold, they fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not. Verse 5, they are upright as the palm tree, but speak not, they must needs to be born, because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. Now, many people believe that, no, this doesn't actually mention actual trees. This cutting of trees, turning them into something, I guess you'd say almost totem poles or something, and decorating those. So it doesn't believe that. And they also say this is part of the Druid pagan religion where God talks about, again, they make these out of, cut a tree down, cut the branches off, and turn it into a totem type of worship symbol, I guess. However, when I looked at one of these Jewish historians, he does mention that that verse talks about the hands of the workman with the axe. Does anyone have something that says something else, mentions more than just the axe? Frankie, what do you have?
A chisel.
A chisel, okay. That what version do you have, you know?
The NIV.
Okay. The King James, the translation was axe. Now, the chisel is used for what? Mr. Perryman certainly knows. What do you do with the chisel?
You carve.
You carve. The axe in the original translation was the only tool mentioned. Because there were some speculations later on about just being an axe and could this be something related to a Christmas tree, they added the chisel. There was another, an adze or something like that in another translation, but the original was simply an axe, meaning they chopped the tree down. You don't take an axe, unless you're one of these artisans that's just incredible with an axe, and create a totem or something like that. You just take an axe, you cut the tree down. So this historian says, no, this was just actually a tree because of the translation. Whether he's right, I don't know, but it is something to really consider. But even if it wasn't, it says stay away from practices of the heathens. They take trees, they put gold. Even if it's a little different, should we follow something like this? Let's look at 2 Corinthians 6. We're going to look at verses 14 through 18. This is one that sometimes we talk about dating outside of the church, if you will. We talk about things like that. But let's look at it from this perspective. It says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? Verse 16, and what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said. I will dwell in them and walk in them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be you separate, says the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. Verse 18, and will be a father unto you, and you shall be sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. He's asking people to stay away from the practices of the world. Let's go to one more verse on this. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 22. While you're turning there, I will tell a short little story. We had a minister several years ago that was looking into some of the kids going to a, I guess it was a club up in Nashville. And you would go there. What was that called? Do you remember that club? Over by Metro Center. All those kids in Nashville would always get in trouble for going over there. Can't remember. But it, you could be 18, you could go over there, but it wasn't a place you should probably go. That's why I asked Debbie. I just think she was there every night. But this place, one of our ministers started looking into it. It's not Mr. Keller, so I'll go ahead and say that. And, well, some friends of mine came up to me from Nashville and said, "You're not going to believe what we saw the other night." And they said, this minister, if I say his name, everyone knows who he is. He came walking out of there, and he had a cigarette in his hand. And I didn't believe it because this guy that told me, I didn't believe half of what he said anyway. So I didn't think anything about it. Well, I got home that day, and this minister called our house and asked for me. And oh, crap, why did I do this to him? And come to find out, he was asking me about this. And I said, well, he told me. He said, did you tell anybody else? And actually, I'd forgotten all about it because I didn't believe this guy anyway. And so he told me, well, I have a bad habit of keeping a little piece of paper or something rolled up in my hand and carrying it around. I thought, well, whether he did or not, I don't know. So I got off the phone, and Mom and Dad asked what was going on, and I told them that and said that. And my dad said something, and it's verse 5, verse 22. Abstain from all appearance of evil. If it looks like you're doing something, it's going to look like it to other people. What's their first impression? Whether he actually, knowing this guy, who knows? I mean, but it very well could have been, knowing this minister. But stay away from the appearance of evil. Jeremiah 10:2, if it is a totem or if it's a tree, if it's questionable, stay away from it. God doesn't want part of that as part of your celebration of Him. Just stay away from it. The Yule log. Now, because I didn't grow up with Christmas, I don't know a lot about a Yule log. I know they take a big log and it burns and it's supposed to give peace and all of that good stuff. But the majority of Europeans believe that if you kept this log burning throughout the Christmas, 12 days of Christmas and all of that good stuff, that the house would be protected from witchcraft. Now notice the next part of what it says. Sometimes the ashes were used in the creation of various what? Charms? To free cattle from vermin, for example, or to ward off hailstorms. Charms and ward. We don't use that in everyday English, do we? What do those relate to? Those relate to something we hear about witchcraft. About. So the very thing that they want to keep away, they believe, oh, these ashes will take care of it. We could build a charm out of them, and they'll take care of our cattle. You know, we won't have the disease. Or they'll ward off hailstorms. You don't hear ward other than within witchcraft. Now, what does God say about things like this? Exodus 22, we were there. Exodus 22, verse 18. As I need to get a move on this, you don't have to turn there, but it says, you shall not suffer a witch to live. God's very clear on this. God did not want anything to do with various charms, or He did not want people use ashes to ward off hailstorms. This is not relying on God. This is relying on different spirits. This is something God did not want people to do. He wanted people to die. Just like someone that would be a murderer, they should be put to death. He believed that anyone that fell for this kind of stuff should be put to death. Now, the Christmas celebration, again, you can find absolutely tons of different little rituals, I guess you'd say. But it's just, there's no time to go into it. You can look into it yourselves. Point number three, the focus of this time of year is not on Christ. Again, my wife mentioned how mean people are this time of year if you try to grab the last whatever from the store or try to get a parking spot at one of these malls this time of year. In the U.S. last year, the United States spent $469 billion on Christmas. Given to each other, sure, giving, keeping the economy going, but what could that $469 billion have done for the United States. Well, according to this economist, Jeffrey Sachs, I guess is his name, he estimates that $175 billion per year for 20 years would end world poverty if we put that towards that. So just take, what, a third of this, and you could basically end world poverty if we decided to give to the right, I don't know if you want to give to the government because they don't seem to do it right, but this could take care of world poverty. Now, the Center on Budget and Policy, they state that $496 billion, which is a little more, but when you're talking that many billion, you're not talking that much, would take care of every social program in America. Now, this was last year. I'm not sure about whether you say Obamacare, Affordable Health Care Act, if that's actually calculated in. But this kind of money would actually take care of every problem, every social program that we have in the United States. So that's a lot of money that's spent on something just to keep the economy going. Is a focus on Christ here. I don't think churches drag in $469 billion this time of year, do they? But what's the focus on? And we were out there at 8 o'clock the day after Thanksgiving. The gifts are given to each other. You know, and someone once told me that was arguing a little bit about Christmas. Well, the gifts that we give, which can, you can trace that back to also pagan religions if you'd like to, they were given to each other, but they're not given to God, are they? They're not given to, just like the wise men, if you say the shepherds, they gave to the baby. They gave to the God. They did not give to each other and make it a greedy, I want this, I want that. Something that I never really thought about is something that I found looking into this. The giving, and it's in all the songs and everything, is to see if you've been bad or good and all that stuff, so be good, is based on whether a child is good or not. Now, whether they're bad or good, they're still going to get the gifts, aren't they? But this belief is you better be good so you can get these gifts. Well, in the world's view, we don't need to be good, do we? So it's almost in direct opposition to what they believe, because grace, you get it no matter what, you could be good. And yet, in here, they say you have to be good. Well, in their worldview of grace, you don't have to be good. You could be good or bad. So that's totally the opposite of what they supposedly believe in. So again, the focus is not on Christ. What is it? This is the opening of who knows what on Friday morning, probably 5 o'clock. Black Friday, that's what the focus is. It's not on Christ. You hear the songs, but nobody's ignoring them. They're fighting for whatever electronic they can get a hold of. That's their main focus. What should the focus be? And it doesn't have to be just this time of year, does it? The greatest commandment, what's it? Matthew 22 and verse 37. You shall love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. That's the focus that we should have. Not focus on, oh, let's get the greatest toy, let's get this. The focus should be on Christ, but it doesn't have to be just as the world does, December 25th. And even though they proclaim it is, it's not. They don't focus on it. It's looking at what we can get, what can we give our kids, you know, how spoiled rotten we can make our kids. We've done that even without Christmas, I think. They may disagree. You shall love the Lord your God. Now, the final, would God appreciate the date? Would God appreciate this date? How many people remember where they were September 11th? Some of the very young ones may not. Most everyone remembers that. Remember it well because my father-in-law was in the Pentagon on the side the plane hit, and we didn't know about him for a while. I think you and Debbie were walking, right? You guys were walking. Let me ask you something. If we decided to make September 11th a day to honor Islam, would Americans be angry? Would we be furious about that? Why? Why would we be furious about that? I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it? You think God would appreciate taking a date that we're about to look at and setting aside to honor His Son? Would be very similar to how we would feel if we decided to make that National Islam Day or something like that. Oral history and ancient Egyptian scrolls that they have found show that many believe December 25th to be the birthday of Nimrod. You can find that all over the internet. There's AlmightyWind.com. He's a Jewish historian who has studied the Egyptian scrolls and studied some of the oral histories that have been passed down. And if you look on the internet, ask what the date of Nimrod's birthday is, it's always December 25th. There's no question anywhere about that. It's pretty specific. Now, we know from Luke 2, verse 8, this is why I said this was going to be key later on, that December was too cold for the shepherds to be in the fields. They would not, it was a rainy season, they would not keep the sheep or livestock out at that time of year. They would let them out during the day, bring them back in during the nighttime because it's too cold. If the animals had gotten wet during the rainy season, you don't want them out. They would bring them in at that time of year. And the census, which is mentioned in Luke 2 and verse 1, was typically held in the fall because of the rainy season in the winter time. It was too hard to travel to get a complete census, so it was usually taken in the fall right before that winter, that rainy season that's held. Again, looking at this, the last two, yeah, they kind of point toward, there's no way it would have been December 25th. That first one, December 25th, Nimrod, someone in the Bible who God condemns as maybe one of the worst people that ever lived. Again, going back to Saturnalia and Mithra, would God appreciate taking something as special as His Son and saying, okay, let's make this day that? The same thing as taking September 11th and saying, let's honor the Islamic people. You're perverting something that actually happened. I have to say God probably does not appreciate this. So why was this date used? Talked about it a little while ago. Constantine wanted the Christian religion of Christianity to be accepted. The only way he was going to do that, because these people enjoyed these pagan holidays, these drunken whatever you want to call them, they enjoyed them too much. The only way to get Christianity to be accepted was to integrate these perverted beliefs into it. And that's Constantine, or a figure of him. You can put lipstick on a pig, but guess what? It's still a pig, right? You can't change all of these different factors that fit inside this and say, okay, yeah, you know, if we want to call it Christmas, well, I can call my dog a cat all I want, but it's still a dog, right? And to conclude, should Christmas be a Christian holiday? Let's look at 1 Thessalonians. First Thessalonians 5, verse 21 through 23. If you question something, just look at these verses and do it. Verse 21, prove all things, hold fast that which is good, abstain from all appearance of evil. Verse 23, and the very God of peace sanctify you wholly, and I pray God your whole spirit and soul and body be preserved blameless unto the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. God gives us very specific instructions on how to keep His commandments. Had He wanted these changed, don't you think He would have said, okay, we're going to do away with God's holy days. Let's make Christmas where we celebrate and give gifts and all that. Wouldn't He have made that clear? Wouldn't He have made it very clear? No, He gave specific commandments on how we keep each holy day. So this time of year, yeah, we get in, we may see co-workers and everything else that do keep these days. And it's, I won't say depressing, but it's irritating sometimes to see that people don't accept what they could actually look into. They just go along like a herd. And So this time of year, just remember that all of this stuff is pagan. And just think about it, what, a week and a half from now, it's all gone and we don't have to face it again.